It's Thursday morning. It's 10 a.m. It's Mountain Time, and that means it's time for Tom and Shane Business and Politics. And here we both are in our glory. If you're just joining us, don't forget, you got to subscribe and ring the notification bell. You'll always be notified of our next podcast, and like us and leave a comment because YouTube likes that kind of stuff. And if you like support us monetarily, we'd love that. There's a link in the description below on how to do that. And there's great benefits if you do. So we hope that you'll take advantage of that. And also, we're brought to you by StreamYard. And we also write on Medium.com. Medium.com, where the Swiss Army Knives of Business and Politics. And there's a link in the description below for that. And before we start, I have to give an apology to my co-host and good friend Shane Montalban, because last Tuesday, he was not on the broadcast, and that was entirely my fault because I did not send him the code to be on the broadcast. I have no valid excuse for doing that. It was rude and insensitive of me. And I want to apologize profusely to him for that oversight of mine, but I don't have a legitimate excuse for doing it. So,
well, thank you. That's very kind of you, Tom. I appreciate that and accept your apology. I just want to mention before we get started that I'd like to speak for Canadians and all the members of the Commonwealth of Nations, largest trading bloc in the world of 58 countries, that the Queen of England, Elizabeth II, established and created over her 70-year reign, is laid to bed in Balmoral with her family gathering around her. And well, the doctors simply said she was asked to rest. It's apparent at 96 that the Queen is perhaps near the end of her reign as probably one of the greatest monarchs, certainly since Elizabeth I, and of course, Victoria. So our hearts, cry out to the family, and our prayers are for the family and the Queen are there for her from an incredibly large number of people around the world.
Yeah. John says, welcome back, Shane.
So, well, thank you, John. That's very
glad, glad to have him here. All right. Well, today we want to talk about, if I can pull it up here, we want to talk about income inequality. And the poor aren't really poor. The government statistics, Shane, are a little bogus. I think you'll agree with that. And all we have to do is think about inflation. Are the inflation numbers accurate? What's missing? Fuel and food. So do we really have a 6% inflation, an 8% inflation, a 20% inflation? These numbers are just not accurate.
Well, they're not. And the reason we wanted to talk about this briefly is because It's a crying call, of course, for the woke movement and the left for this election coming up on the 8th of November. And, economic inequality is the unequal distribution of income and opportunity between different groups in society. And the premise of America and Canada and all countries that have a capitalist basis is given free opportunity to anyone who wants to succeed, work hard, has that opportunity. The government doesn't interfere with it. The government doesn't tell them what to do. They go out and, follow the rules, follow the guidelines, and make an effort to become wealthy. And it's happened now for over 100 years, and we've changed the world. Unlike, you look at, I just mentioned this, Queen Elizabeth, she was the last Empress of India. And of course, in 1947, the Raj Mountbatten was the last man to be the Raj of India. And the reason I mention that is India in 1948 established a constitution that outlawed the caste system that had existed for 10,000 years in India. And you know, there are even still today, even though it's illegal, over 3,000 castes, meaning different levels of economic value in India, and 25,000 subcastes of that. And it's broken up into four classes, you know, for the, you know, the priestly class, the ruling administrative and warrior class, the artisans and tradesmen and farmers and merchants, and of course, the manual labor. So, you know, the most famous, of course, that the West knows, or most people, are the untouchables who basically clean the sewers and can streets. But the point I'm trying to make is that inequality is not something that the first world is guilty of. We wouldn't be the first world if there was economic inequality.
Well, the caste system, if you were born into a caste, you stayed there. You didn't go to another caste.
Yeah, thank God, because I wouldn't have wanted to have been born a royal. I'm glad I was born in Canada.
Well, that's true.
I'm sure you're glad you're born in America. You know.
Well, we sort of have a caste system in a way, Shane, because when we look at income, the census divides it into five classes: lower middle class 20%, or lower class 20%, lower middle class 20%, middle class 20%, upper middle class 20%, and the rich 20%. And according to the census, too, the lowest 20% make just below $7,000 on average, and 64% of these are unemployed working age earners. And so that means 36% of the people earned enough to average $7,000 over the other 64%. So that's, I would say that's pretty low, but is that right, Shane, because of the way the government reports things?
Well, I don't think that you and I can argue the fact that your government's so brilliant that during COVID, that wasn't their determination when they decided to provide money directly to people to survive the lockdown. People were sent far more money, far greater money than that. And, you know, and so it really made a difference to the lower class. You know, you have the lower class and the middle, lower class, upper class. There's nine classes in your country. You have the lower, you know, the poor, the middle poor, the upper poor, and then, of course, the lower rich, middle rich, and upper rich, and probably super rich, seven classes or nine or whatever. What's important is that the government established equal value, therefore, you know, answering this issue, and from which they then determined how much money that they would send people. And the problem was, is a lot of people that ended up with more money than they would otherwise have, like you mentioned, because they worked and were responsible, all of a sudden moved up a couple of notches and went, gee, this is nice. I want to sort of, you know, it's easy to move up. It's not very easy to move down.
No, that's true. A lot of people, because people are striving to move up. For the most part, no one's striving to move down, I don't think.
That's right. But, exactly.
So, well, the problem is that 7,000 number. We want to talk about that 7,000 number because at last count, the U.S. government had 126 poverty programs. They haven't had less than 100 in 10 years. And between 67 and 2017, the transfer payments and other poverty programs benefited to the poor increased by 269%. Now, what are transfer payments? Well, welfare, food stamps, aid to dependent children, Medicaid, utility and rental assistance, school lunches, you know, the earned income tax credit. And because of those transfer payments, those people making $7,000 now have $48,000 in their bank account, Shane. That seems, no wonder no one wants to work if you can sit home and make $48,000.
Well, and we have to look back at history and cause and effect. And of course, the single biggest cause of this was two renowned economists, oddly enough, John Kenneth Galbraith, who was actually the seventh ambassador to India of all places under the Kennedy administration, but was called home because of Kennedy's desire to want to change things. And he established basically a belief in the Keynesian idea of economics, supply side, basically, and Kennedy picked up on it, as you know, and turned completely or flipped completely from a democratic non-recognition of capitalism to one, and reduced taxes and so forth, and began the great expanse of the American economy. And then, of course, you have Friedman and his shareholder theory of business ethics. And so when you take that together and you look at Friedman's evaluation of economic science and his research on the consumption analysis of the monetary system in a capitalist society, you come to understand better where we're at and how the system and the machine works. His big claim to fame was, of course, that in a time of economic downturn, to prevent a worsening depression, create a recession where the government spends to maintain the balance of the economy and allow growth to come back. And the backside of that, of course, rule two to his thesis was when things get better and the tax revenues start rolling in again and are increasing through the growth period, you pay down the debt. You know, all government since that, they all in on, you know, going into debt, but only one president, and that was Clinton. You got to give him credit for that. In the second term, 96 to 2000, paid back the debt. So, and it worked. Mm-hmm. You know, Clinton proved his thesis by doing it, that it worked. Yeah. So now we're in a real difficult situation as we continue to warn people, since last May, about where we're at on that. So what's going to happen now is you're going to have this stress economy, probably for the next several years at least. The recession of 2022 has happened, as I've said. So now you're going to have this economic distress that's probably going to cause this economic instability and inequality to accelerate. And that's what's really bad. It's bad on every group of people, you know, wanting to live and have a managed lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, we have the poor with 48,000 due to transfer payments. And if we look at the lower middle class, 20%, they made 31,000 and only 15% of them were unemployed. So 85% were working, and transfer and taxes and other benefits put them at 50 grand. So between the poor, the very poorest, and the lower middle class, we've got a difference in income of about 2 grand a year. So is that inequality?
No.
It doesn't sound like it, does it?
But the left is always trying to create this mm-hmm. narrative that America isn't fair. Mm-hmm. America isn't as great as it claims it should be. America isn't this shining, city on a hill. Well, it is. It's all those things. And all you have to do is look at the global numbers from the International Banking, International Monetary Fund, the UN. 1.75 billion people on the planet, over 1.2 billion people. Of 1.75 live on less than $6 US a day. Okay. Like, that's incredible. So, talk about inequality. A lot of those people could live on more, but because of corruption, because of fraud and ineptitude, and because of no free choice, because they're all limited, lack of education. I mean, there's so many reasons, they just live an existence of survival. We have an existence of choice. You know, is that something I want, or is that something I need? It's not too bad. Pretty good deal.
Yeah, the Yeah, the UN back, I think in 99 or 97, somewhere in there, wanted to cut world poverty in half, and they did that by long before 2022. And you're right, people live on a little bit a day, which seems a little strange to us when our affluency. But the fact is that, you know, they're still better off than they were 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
But 70% of the third world's population, 70% are fed free every day by, you know, countries, principally Canada and the United States first. And then what they also contribute to to other international non-government agencies to feed people. So you know, it's incredible that two countries, Canada and the United States, feed themselves and 80% of the world. I mean, that's just.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we're all paying for it. I mean, that's part of our managed lifestyle. That, you know, and we go, okay. You know, so when you see all these ads on television of, you know, help and give money and, you know, it's there's things that have existed in my entire lifetime that I could have given money to, but I haven't because I know my government is doing that. I need a managed lifestyle myself. So I'm not being selfish. It's not that I don't give my tithe at church. I do. But I get my taxes for that, my government. So I'm already paying into it. Don't need to pay twice.
Well, speaking of taxes, then we got to move to the middle class. They earn $66,453. Only 8% of them are unemployed, 92% working. And unfortunately, those folks don't qualify for any benefits at all. So they only get to keep $61,350 of their $66,453. They're paying those taxes that they pay are going into that $48,000 that the poor make and the $50,000 that the lower middle class make. So the gap between the haves and the have-nots, if it's truly reported, is pretty damn small.
It is
in the United States.
And this the great thing about these numbers is twofold. First, they're government numbers, so you have to go with them because, you know, governments don't lie. The other interesting aspect of this is when people are yelling about tax the rich, tax the rich, and you look at these government numbers and you go, wait, a little more than 10% of what they earn or their gross income is paid in taxes. Plus, it doesn't make references of all the other benefits that both the middle and lower class get. So, in fact, really, it's less than that, even though that's what they pay directly. You know, there's other benefits they get, write-offs and so forth. So it's a wonderful situation that you have where people have the ability to manage their life because of the work they do and their education and realize a wonderful lifestyle and have children and a home and are able to really, not right now, but in past patterns, you know, have what they want to eat as opposed to what they need to eat.
If you're wondering why there's so many now hiring signs around your neighborhood, and there probably are, this is one of the reasons that the poor are making enough, you know, to survive and without working. So why bother? And our biggest problem is it's really easy to get on the dole, but there's no real incentive by the government to get off.
Well, there's a thing missing here that's really important and needs to be mentioned. During COVID, when you had that recession, and it was a harsh one, Trump was right when he called it would be a V recovery, down and up, and it was. But the fact was, is because of the need for employment for the companies that tried to stay open, they had to pay people more. And so it's like, you know what, when you talk about it, it's not so difficult where we live to move up in value or in class value, but no one likes to go back. It's the same with wages. You can't really cut people's wages, you know, after you started raising them. So a lot of people pre-COVID had one and a half or two jobs, and then they found out because of what happened with COVID that the increase in salary they had they only needed one. And that's a good thing in the sense of their lifestyle, but not good for the economy, because I don't think that the government, and I can't find it anywhere, makes an allowable examination of that number. How many people are only really working one job now that 2 or 3 years ago were working two?
Yeah, that would be an interesting. Well, as you know, the unemployment, which we also question all the time, has six levels of how they determine unemployment, and we only report one of them, which is you know, the actual unemployment is usually about double what the reported unemployment is. So, but yeah, due to all these things. You know, as we mentioned before, the welfare, the food stamps, the, you know, rental assistance, school lunches, all of the things that are added to the poor that they can qualify for by not working. Back when Clinton revised the, you know, what you were talking about, where he balanced the budget, and that yes. One of the things they did back then was they had a work requirement for in order to get welfare and some of these benefits. There was a work requirement attached to it, unless you were physically or mentally unable to work. But what happened was when the subprime meltdown started and people were in real trouble, they relaxed that work ethic, and the COVID made it even worse. So they relaxed it even more. And I think right now, I don't think there's a work ethic applied to any benefits that I'm aware of. If there are, they're not enforcing it. The government's great. They're great at handing out money. They're not very good at enforcing who's getting it, and it's going to the right place for the right reasons.
That's right. And again, we need to make reference to Bill Clinton, a great campaigner, incredibly intelligent, made a personal blunder, that will haunt his legacy as president. But this is also the Democratic president in a State of the Union address, got up before a majority of Democrats in both the House in the Senate, and a majority of Republicans in the House, and said the age of big government is over. Mm-hmm. And what's so amazing is the Democratic Party, you know, accolades. This guy is the best. Well, this is the guy that said, you know, we don't need big government. It's not the answer. So these ironies in politics in your history have to be looked back upon because of the impact that they had. Ronald Reagan famously worked with a great member of the House from Massachusetts, O'Neill. And they worked together to save the U.S. economy from the commercial recession that happened because of the banking back then. And Clinton worked with, the majority leader of the House, Republican, who's on television all the time talking about it. And so there's always been this ability for great leaders, not politicians, but great leaders that understood the situation at the moment. Now you have a guy who can't walk off the stage because, you know, he waddles around looking for X's X's on the ground where he should stand. He should just head for the exit because he doesn't know who to work with. He says he does, and then he calls them, you know, crazy people and dangerous to your country. And so there's this confluence of the inability of the Democrats to work with themselves. That's what's so incredible. They control it all, and they can't even get it right.
I know. Yeah, they're they got the big Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA of all acronyms, I guess to call it.
Well,
some investment. And they're trying
well,
to
the
make
IRA,
a deal.
remember, the IRA also stood in our lifetime for the Irish Republican Army. So
well, that's what I was thinking.
We're gonna
have a civil war between in the Democrats,
well,
so between the Catholics and the Protestants.
That's what the Democrats want. They've done it before. Yeah. They want it again. I mean, you know, he gets up and makes a speech and accuses MAGNA of being the biggest danger in the country after he allowed his party and people in his party's run states and cities to burn them down. So I mean, the only cities that haven't been burnt down are cities run by Republicans in your country.
Seems like it.
I don't think that's going to happen, Tommy.
Yeah. Well, some final thoughts from me on income equality. There's two things. One is that there's a fallacy about money. A lot of people think that if one person gets a dollar, they had to take it away from someone else. And that's not true, because there's not a finite amount of money in the United States. Most money is ones and zeros on computer screens. It's not physical. When you pop your card in at Walmart, no money changes hands. Ones and zeros change hands.
Yes, it's a virtual transaction.
It's a virtual thing, yeah. And the other thing is that what difference does it make how much Jeff Bezos or Warren Buffett make compared to what you make? Because there's a difference between those two salaries, there's nothing stopping you from being in Buffett territory or Bezos territory. If you have a good idea and you run with it, that's all they did. You know, so, this fallacy of, these guys make so much money. Well, what baseball players, the average bench sitter makes a half a billion, all professional athletes are in the, in the 750 million. So I don't see anybody picketing their houses or asking them for their fair share.
Quarters of a million, not billion.
What's that?
Salaries.
They're 750 million. Yeah.
750 million salaries.
Yeah. Yeah. They make $500 million.
Oh, who does? What athlete makes $500 million?
Well, let's see. Well, no, you're right. 500,000 per year. So 500,000. You're right. 500,000, not 500 million. You're right.
I mean, there are several that are worth that, but that's not because of the sports. That's because of the marketing that contracts.
Yeah. No, that's true. I'm just saying
Tiger Woods has made several million. I think about 7 or 8 million golfing, but he's made hundreds of millions with Nike and other sponsors.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, LeBron James.
Look, the bottom line is, you have all these opportunities.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what race, to a great degree, your level of education, to a great degree, your level of experience. If you have a pursuit, if you live to work, if you understand the difference, if you work to live, you work for the man. Now you're limiting what you're going to make. But if you live to work, you find some passion you love and you get up every day to get there, and you live to do this, you probably will have a greater opportunity to move up the economic ladder. And that's why I always say that it's my brand. You know that. I always say, live in the moment and live to work. If you want to get ahead, that's what you got to do. And you have the freedom to do that in the great countries of the world that have a capitalist system.
That is so, so true. Well, I've got to remind you, the award-winning Tom and Shane are live every Saturday on radio, 8 to 11 Mountain Time, KMMSAM.com. Write it down, KMMSAM.com. You don't have to join anything. You don't have to sign into anything. You don't have to leave any information of any kind. You just go there and enjoy the show. And if you missed any of our past shows, they're also at KMMSAM.com. Just click on Tom and Shane Podcast when you go over there, and you will find all of our past shows there. And, of course, don't forget that we also write on Medium.com. Medium.com, go over and check out our articles. There's a link to the description or a link to those in the description below. So check those out. And so Thanks for being here, Shane.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Glad I remembered to send you the code.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. I prefer not to be accused of not wanting to show up.
I know.
This is great. Everybody out there that does watch our show, we thank you. It means a lot to us, and we want to give a shout out to all of you, and we'll just ask if you could just. If you enjoy our shows, would you please refer them to your friend or email them, share them on your Facebook page?
Absolutely, yeah.
And help us build our following because it isn't for the want of money. We're retired and the government supports us. So there you go. We're in that great percent of managed lifestyles. But, we think what we have to say is valuable. And to be quite honest, without patting myself or Tom on the back, we've been right. So if you want to listen to really the news, or you want to listen to the truth of what is happening on a global basis in politics, in money, in agriculture, in science, and every level of interest that you might have as a human being, you should watch and share us.
That's right. Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. So, all right, that's it. We will talk to you on the radio on Saturday, and we hope that you will join us over there. You can call, you can text. We'll give you all the numbers when we're there. And by all means, join the show. We'd love to have you as a listener, and we'd love to have you as a viewer as well as on this platform. So thanks for watching Tom and Shane Business and Politics. Don't forget to subscribe, ring the notification bell, and like us. And we will see you on our next podcast, which will be next Tuesday.